This is the EPFR Exchange Podcast. All opinions expressed by Cam, Todd, and our podcast guests are solely of their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of EPFR or Informa, its parent company. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for investment decisions.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the EPFR Exchange Podcast. My name is Kirsten Longbottom, and I'm joined by EPFR's economist, Cameron Brandt. We'll walk you through what our teams were monitoring last week in the data EPFR tracks, as well as what we'll look for in the upcoming week. In the second week of July, did we find investors exiting markets given the current conditions, or were there signs of optimism?
Optimism might be putting it a little strongly, but I put a title of It Gets Darkest Just Before the Dawn on this week's Navigator for reason, which is that, frankly, given the still unsettled and frequently alarming backdrop for markets, what was surprising this week was how moderate the outflows were, and that in some cases we saw inflows, especially on the fixed income side. I think there is a sense that we may be sort of reaching the point where we're at, or certainly close to the bottom of this particular cycle. And some work by Syed Baranyan, who heads our quantitative research efforts, seems to indicate that if you look at flows from the perspective of 60-day drawdowns, that the pattern at the moment is very similar to what we saw prior to the previous market drawdown and bounce back. So I think even though flows took place in a week where the Canadian Central Bank hiked rates by 100 basis points, U.S. inflation came in at its highest headline reading in 41 years, which raises the odds that the Fed might follow their Canadian counterparts, and that the war in the Ukraine is grinding on, and also feeding growing fears that because Russia is not making the progress it clearly hoped for, it will start to utilize its chokehold on European energy supplies more aggressively to try and stem the flow of tangible support to the Ukraine, and that could easily translate into energy rationing, all of which certainly could happen. But, investors are not kind of fleeing for the exits. They're certainly taking on a more defensive stance. They are pulling out of some fund groups, alternative funds saw another $1 billion exit this past week, and emerging market bond funds remain reliably unpopular. But there certainly seems to be a sense of, at the very least, testing bottom.
Well, in some sense, hopefully we are at rock bottom and the bounce back is positive and strong. From what I'm feeling, whether COVID cases and inflation are all running hot. Like you mentioned, the Bank of Canada became the first G7 country to make an aggressive 100 basis point rate hike, and the latest U.S. inflation numbers are at a 40-year high. What are your expectations of the Fed taking action this month, and at what level?
I think bar something exceptional happening, that we're certainly looking at a 75 basis points hike. And to some degree, the market consensus opens the door for the Fed to be more aggressive, which gives them options. A majority may decide, we need to get take the pain up front. If we do raise it by 100 basis points, markets aren't going to be happy, but they're not going to be shocked. You know, that might be one of the last rate hikes we have to do, given that, macroeconomic trends certainly suggest slower growth ahead, which should start to pull down inflation. Markets, though, having immediately in the wake of that number sort of started to price in 100 basis point hike, seemed to be pulling back a bit. And there are some data points to come out between then and now. So I think 75 basis points are given, a high possibility, but not a certainty, that they might take the opening to hike rates by 100 basis points now, with the thinking that that will get the painful part of this cycle over with earlier.
Okay, so despite inflation at a high, we saw investors overall commit fresh amounts of money to bond funds, with US, Europe, and Asia Pacific bond funds recording inflows. Is this a surprising figure?
Not really. There's a rotation that goes on in periods of timing. The people that hold bonds as sort of a capital preservation vehicle tend to reduce their exposure, because as rates go up, the capital portion of their holdings gets eroded. But there are other people who've been waiting to come into the bond market to get some decent yield, and suddenly, 10-year treasuries might, if you choose the right day, give you sort of around 3%, which hasn't happened in a while. So, I think there is at a low level a shift from the exit of capital preservationists to the inflow of conservative yield seekers. So the short answer is no. I think it's also true that, sort of in keeping with the are we at bottom analysis, that there's a significant number of financial professionals and investors who think that this tightening cycle will be short and sharp, that economic facts on the ground could have the Fed actually cutting rates again by the second half of next year. And if you believe that analysis, you will sort of position yourself to take advantage of it. The Asia Pacific one is interesting, because certainly a narrative that sort of intruded in the flows really over the past sort of 3 or 4 weeks is a kicking of the tires on the previously cast iron assumption that Japan's central bank was going to go its own ultra accommodative way, regardless of what happened in the rest of the world. That's proving difficult, or more difficult, to hold on to that consensus in the current environment, because by being the sort of last QE bank standing, it keeps the Japanese currency vulnerable to depreciation against its major trading partners. And while historically the immediate assumption there has been, that's good for Japanese exports, that doesn't hold up so well if, to create those exports, you're having to bring in increasingly important raw materials and components that are priced in much more expensive dollars. If you're a Japanese retiree or a Japanese pension fund, you're starting to look again, we can shift more into U.S. treasuries, or funds offering exposure to U.S. treasuries, which are yielding 3% versus sort of nothing to some small minus figure for our homegrown bonds. So capital flight is probably a too dramatic word to use in the context of Japan, but, a reallocation of capital away from domestic to foreign debt is certainly a possibility. And if that got to be significant, I think that would certainly complicate the choices facing the Bank of Japan's policymakers.
A new filter in development for EPFR's database is collective investment trusts, or CITs, which have a lower regulatory burden. Can you explain a bit more about these and tell us what EPFR's data is showing?
Well, what I think is significant about these and the fact that, you know, we're starting to track them in response to investor demand is that the response we've seen to the current bout of uncertainty has obviously involved, you know, exits, drawdowns, reallocation to defensive sectors. But underneath the headline numbers, there's been a pattern of not bailing out of areas of concentration, or if that happens at a much lower rate than you might expect, and instead a search for ways to get that exposure at a lower cost. So year to date, even though, you know, markets have been, as we have seen, turbulent and generally heading in the wrong direction, equity and bond ETFs collectively are in positive territory, certainly in terms of flows year to date, not true of actively managed funds. And collective investment trusts are another way of, you know, saving a little bit on your investment costs. Their lower regulatory burden means they have lower expenses, and they tend to pass some of those along to their investors as a way of garnering business. So, you know, at least for the moment, you know, looking to save some basis points on your investment vehicle costs is an option that a lot of investors in the mutual fund space seem to be taking rather than sort of completely exiting.
Very interesting. So last question, we'll wrap it up with this one. We've seen quite heavy redemptions at over $500 million for four of the sector fund groups in the last few weeks. Two others recorded redemptions, while five groups saw inflows in the second week of July. Positive signs are showing for utilities and healthcare sector funds. What's your insight overall for sector funds?
I mean, overall, the sector funds are, I think, where a lot of people would expect them to be, which is the more defensive ones, are the ones that investors are gravitating to. Utilities are historically associated with dividend paying stocks, which are very popular. So no huge surprise that that group is doing quite well, though. I will be keeping my eye on that because the erosion of free market principles has certainly made governments more willing to intrude on utilities when the costs are going through the roof. You know, France's full renationalization of its major energy company being perhaps the most stark example. Healthcare, I think, is a slight standalone. You know, as you've mentioned a couple of times, COVID is sending constant reminders that, you know, we may not be out of the pandemic stage just yet, that while we hope and act as if it is now an endemic illness, that's open for debate. You have monkeypox certainly garnering some share of the headlines, though, you know, as my research has seemed to indicate, that it'll be fairly hard for that to get traction, especially given the still heightened awareness around exotic viruses. But on the other hand, you know, if you're following the flu season, which sort of tends to kick off in the APAC region, Australia's finding it to be a tougher than usual one. You know, people's resistance to things that previously we were routinely exposed to almost on an annual basis has had a two-year hiatus, and as a result, bang. So, yeah, you know, we're also heading into an earnings season, which is going to struggle to surprise on the upside, as they say. So, you know, $500 million out here and there is, you know, I think we're going to be seeing a bit of that in the weeks to come.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for your insight, and look forward to chatting next week.
Good. Me too.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the EPFR Exchange podcast. For more information or to suggest a topic for a future podcast, please visit epfr.com/podcast.